Hey everybody, Scott Horton here. You ought to consider advertising on the show. Here's how it'll work. You give me money, and then I'll tell everybody how great your stuff is, they'll buy it, and we'll all be rich as Republicans. Sound pretty good? Shoot me an email, scott@scotthorton.org, and we'll work it out.
All right, y'all, introducing Tim Kelly. He's a columnist and policy advisor at the Future Freedom Foundation, FFF.org. And he's a correspondent for Radio America's Special Investigator, also a political cartoonist. Oh, I ought to check out your cartoon sometime. Welcome back to the show, Tim. How are you doing?
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me back. It's an honor.
Welcome. I'm very happy to have you here, and very happy to have you writing these great articles, too. Later in the show, I want to ask you about the Corporatist Intelligence Agency.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the company. Yeah.
Yeah. But first, three reasons why the charges against Bradley Manning should be dropped. And, you know, I sure am glad to see this, and I wonder just how, you know, what percentage of the American population agrees with you about this, but I think it's a pretty sizable number. Why don't you go ahead and take us through your reasons that you think Bradley Manning ought to be set free?
Well, the moment the case kind of made news a couple of years ago, it became clear to me that Bradley Manning, the information he's releasing, had nothing to do with genuine national security. He wasn't releasing nuclear codes or border or battle plans or anything like that. He was releasing to the public, to WikiLeaks, real crimes and also incompetence, stupidity, arrogance, double dealing on the part of U.S. government officials, the military. And in that, he was a whistleblower. So when the government went after him, accused him of aiding the enemy and all that stuff, it was just on its face absurd. You could see what he was, you know, he released the, I guess it can be called as the collateral murder video. And from what I understand, from the details, he had at first attempted to alert his superiors about this stuff, and they had refused to do anything about it. So he more or less was following, I guess, what were legitimate channels. You know, he first tried to alert his superiors of wrongdoing, and they refused to do it. They covered it up, and he released the information. So it was clear to me that he wasn't the traitor, the spy that they were trying to make him out to be. He was just revealing truths to the American people about what the government was doing overseas. And of course, the government was scant at that because they like to be able to operate in secret and not be held accountable for their actions. So that's his real crime, and that's why he's being persecuted as opposed to being prosecuted.
Yeah. Well, and on that point, let me just say real quick that it's in the if we accept them, and I guess they are widely accepted as now the complete transcripts, or at least what has been released are legitimate transcripts of Bradley Manning's chats with Adrian Lamo, the rat that turned him in. And Lamo, I think at this point, already working for the government and trying to get him in as much trouble as he possibly can. Is saying, well, why don't you sell this stuff to the Chinese or the Russians? And he says, no way, I'm giving this to the people of America mostly, and really the civilians of the world, so that they can use their democratic power to do the right thing. And he doesn't even know that he's paraphrasing Thomas Jefferson.
That's what happened.
I mean, it's the purest whistleblower kind of motives that you could get. I mean, here's this guy's trying to get him to, tempt him, basically. And he's like, yeah, right. You can't. No. I don't want that.
Yeah. And then, of course, then when he was arrested, he was subjected to, just what you call torture, enhanced interrogation techniques by his jailers. And that in itself is a case, is a strong argument for all the charges to be dropped because he's being mistreated. And when that happens, there should be some sort of exclusionary rule, which there usually is. The judge finds that, that the suspect has been mistreated. That's it. You blow in your case. Let him go. You can't do this to people. And it became obvious to me that at least it's highly, I think it's suggested in the treatment that they're trying to break him so he can be a witness against Julian Assange. Supposedly there's a secret indictment over there in Alexandria, Virginia. I mean, they're searching for a crime. And I don't know what Julian Assange isn't even an American citizen. I mean, he's a journalist, really, so they can go up to him. They might as well go up to the Washington Post, New York Times, and any other news outlet that's published the stories related to WikiLeaks. revelation.
Yeah, I mean, it really does seem to be kind of a novel legal theory that they're using there. If they can get Manning to say that Assange asked him to do what he did, then somehow they're going to say, well, now that's no longer a government source leaking a classified document to a journalist, which we all know. Now it's fair game. That's the American way. Nope, this isn't that. This is now an espionage conspiracy.
Yeah. And also, it is a matter of law, international law, U.S. law, that if a soldier is aware of war crimes, he has a duty to reveal them. So if he hadn't have done, you could argue that he was in violation of his oath if he hadn't tried to do all he can to reveal this stuff.
That's right.
To the extent, because then there's the issue of command influence or command interference, where you have the president and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff both pronouncing his guilt. That right there means that he cannot get a fair trial within the military justice system because the people who be sitting in judgment of him are career officers. Are they going to turn around and contradict the commander-in-chief and the highest-ranking officer in the armed forces? I don't think so. And so right there, that's number two. That's why the charges should be dropped.
Well, and what's funny there is, I guess the defense already conceded that they just wanted the judge to decide and forego the jury. But whether you want to attribute it to command interference or influence or not, which I think you could, she's already decided that the whistleblower defense is no defense. In fact, are they limited it anyway? He can say he was a whistleblower only to defend himself from the charge that he was deliberately trying to aid the enemy. But it cannot be used as an excuse for any other thing he's accused of doing, such as downloading, transferring, uploading, whatever they call it, you know?
And again, what you have here is when they say aiding the enemy, I think I point this out in the article, but who do they mean the enemy is? They've provided no evidence. First of all, the information he released doesn't aid the enemy. It just gives the U.S. government a black eye or reveals certain crimes and other misdemeanors or whatever. But so it doesn't really, it's this overblown idea of national security, which they use for secrecy. And government, I guess in theory you could say, yeah, there is a need for secrecy for some things, but the overwhelming amount of things that they classify and keep to the American people have nothing to do with general national security. It has everything to do with avoiding accountability and covering things up.
Yeah, even Robert Gates said that, no, this is all a bunch of hyperventilating. Bradley Manning actually didn't compromise anything. After all, it was, I think you were saying, just secret level and confidential level cables.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not top secret stuff.
And when it suits their purposes, they have no problem leaking top secret stuff. I mean, no one investigates the leaks coming out of the White House. It leaks like a sieve when it suits their purposes.
Right.
But no one investigates that, you know. But in this case, when it doesn't suit their purpose, when it reveals that Hillary Clinton was engaging in identity theft at the UN, then all of a sudden it's national security.
Like, you know what? I swear, Tim, I saw something earlier that said, I think it was a Democrat in the Congress was basically twisting Glenn Greenwald, so to speak, the proverbial Glenn Greenwald argument that, well, why don't you do this to the New York Times then, you know? And there was I think it was in the Congress, a Democrat was saying, well, maybe we should prosecute the New York Times like they're Julian Assange. And you have a point there.
Yeah, don't give them any ideas, as if the New York Times poses any real threat to the power structure. Well, I think it was I think it might be Jack Blood, who says, remember, all laws are selectively enforced.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, so when it suits their purposes, they prosecute. Just like, you know, some drug cartels are allowed to operate, some aren't. Send a law, you're allowed to operate for a little while. And so purposes, we'll team up with you for a while. We'll leave some drugs in the garage for some other guys to suit our purposes.
Well, the truth is, thank goodness, right? What if there was total enforcement of all the laws? This would be worse than any totalitarianism the Nazis could have dreamed of, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, and so, you know, yes, it's Bradley Manning. You know, I would say that he released the stuff, but I mean, for all the evidence I've seen, he did it for all the right reasons. And there is no absolute claim for secrecy in this country. There is no government secrets law. There is government seeks to doctrine, which was created by the courts. I think it was Edwards versus the United States when it was proven, it was established regarding a lawsuit over a crash of a B-29 bomber. And the family sued the government. The government claimed state secrets doctrine, or state secrets privilege, and the court created it. Of course, the court, I think, assumed the right to determine whether or not it applies or not. But it was interesting enough, 20, 25 years later, it was revealed that the government was lying in that case. So the whole doctrine was based on a lie. You know, so, you know, they had nothing to do with national security. They were they invoked state secret privilege to cover up incompetence, to avoid accountability.
And they now exclude entire trials rather than just certain pieces of evidence from a trial.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's when you see, the fact that it's so obvious, as Tech said, it's so obvious you don't have to have any real expertise in the law to understand this, that, you know, the case should have been dropped long ago just for all these three basic reasons. The fact that it hasn't, and they're persisting in their prosecution of this man, just shows you that the other corruption of our legal system, or our political system. Yeah. You've had people calling for for Julian Assange to be murdered and all this. But these are people that, you know, that supposedly have, you know, write columns, have serious opinions on things, and they suggest that he should be taken out. What is that supposed to mean? I mean, does he want to live in a country where you can be taken out? Well, we do live in a country where you can be taken out if you present I think it was Glenn Greenwald that said that the thing against crusade against WikiLeaks and Julian Assange proves that what happens to you if you present a real problem to the federal government. I mean, they'll tolerate me. I mean, who am I, right? I mean, but the moment if I were to say something that presented a real threat to them, then I'd be in trouble. And I think that's the truth. It's the sad truth. And you can talk about law. You try to use the law as a shield. When it comes down to it, your shield's going to be very little protection against the sheer power of the federal government. You know, right. And I'd like to think the public opinion would matter, but it doesn't, because it doesn't matter if the media is controlled or manipulated, you know, by the powers that be, which it clearly is, at least the corporate media is. And that's the sad statement about our, you know, state of affairs in our country today.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that the American people are even primed to let the government smear Bradley Manning and make him the target of their derision and their 2 minutes hate for a while or whatever it is. I mean, we ought to be bulletproof from that kind of thing. I mean, especially because of, you know, how the fact, like we were talking about before, how he really did mean well. He really didn't do anything wrong to anyone, only right. And come on, man, you know? And they successfully said, oh, no, America, you hate this kid. He almost got you killed somehow or whatever. Well, blood on his hands.
You're hoping the enemy. Well, who's the enemy? We don't want to say. Well, we know who the enemy is. Because
we fight him in Afghanistan and we back him in Syria, and we don't want you talking about that.
And I think what comes out of it is the reason why government keeps these secrets is not to protect us from our enemies, to protect them from us. They don't want us to know what's going on.
Yeah, and us means people around the world, too. I mean, you saw widespread consequences from the release of the WikiLeaks. In a way, not to argue the government's case for them, but, I mean, I think the release of the WikiLeaks really did change a lot of things and really helped push the beginning of the Arab Spring in Tunisia and in Egypt, which I guess that change is going to come anyway, but it seemed to have a lot to do with that. And I think that there have been a lot of scandals and corruptions revealed that have been countered, and not that everything's perfect or whatever, but, you know, for example, one of the WikiLeaks had a story of American soldiers murdering this family, including shooting their babies and everything, and then calling in an airstrike in order to try to get rid of all the evidence, but they hit the wrong side of the house, and so all the corpses were examined and all the proof came out. And it's a American military document describing all of this, and that came out right when they were trying to negotiate for immunity to stay in Iraq forever. And it was the perfect cover for Maliki to say, you know what, I just can't politically, I can't pull it off right now, since the truth came out about you guys murdering those babies and lying about it and everything. And so that was it. It was right the end of November 2011, clock running out, and that was it. And so, you know, if you admit that America is a corrupt, evil empire that means to dominate Iraq forever, then you can cry that, yes, Bradley Manning cost the empire its Iraq that it tried to kill and steal. But you know what? That's not, you can't really call that harm to any interest that you can admit to on TV, basically. You have to pretend that, oh, well, we didn't want Iraq anyway. So they can't really call it harm, right? Even though you really did screw them up bad.
Well, you know, Truth shall set you free.
Somebody, anyway. Well, and by the way, you sort of just mentioned it, but I think maybe some people don't know, Tim, about the command influence and the statements made by the president, the secretary of defense, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff about Bradley Manning. Can you fill them
in
on that, please?
That should be a deal killer right there.
I mean, what did they say? Take us through it, though.
Well, Barack Obama was asked at a function where by a internet reporter, I believe, one of these internet guys, because the other one wanted to ask any real questions. Everyone else was just sycophants. And he goes, asked about the Bradley Manning case. And he pressed him on the fact that Bradley Manning was a whistleblower, and the president pronounced his guilt before the trial. And the president's commander-in-chief of the armed forces. He cannot do that.
Yeah, former law professor, this guy.
Yeah. And then the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dempsey, does the same thing. He echoed the president. He said, you know, he's guilty. He did these things. And you can't do that. You got to, I mean, at the very least, they should know to keep their trap shut when they're asked about this stuff. But despite all that, they're pressing, they're going ahead with the prosecution. And there's no, like I said, you can cite these, rather than lawyers can cite these in court, but the judge simply ignores it. Law does not stand. The law is silent, even when we're at war, even if we're really technically at war. The law is silent. It does very little, very weak, the very weak shield against sheer political power. And that's what we're seeing. That's
right.
What we are. It shows that we're an empire, a lawless empire of illegality, and you think something so public and so obvious just to vindicate the law would make them follow this, and they won't do it, and there's no consequences for it.
Man, that's a very good way to put it. Yeah.
You know,
is a weak shield against political power. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Everywhere you look, you have the law, and it always loses out against power because the people are ill-informed intentionally on this stuff. They have a knee-jerk respect for authority, even ill-gotten or illegitimate authority, and they're so easily driven into jingoistic frenzies that they don't know that they're being taken for a ride in this stuff, and that's the sad thing. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's so obvious.
Well, and you know what, too? You talk about they're going ahead with this prosecution, but only sort of, kind of. And you talk about the law versus politics. I don't know exactly what the law is, but it sure must be weak tea, this military law about what counts as a speedy trial and what doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to think, I think I must have learned in elementary school or something, that if they, for some reason, don't give you a speedy trial, they got to let you go. Because your trial is either speedy or not one. I mean, that's the rules, right? But here we are almost 3 years since he's been arrested.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's pretrial punishment. That's what it is. That's the crime. You don't do that to somebody. Even if he was guilty, even if he was a spy, I would expect that he'd be given humane treatment. I mean, that's the difference between civilization and the jungle.
It's too bad the American people didn't elect Ron Paul, because he would have pardoned Bradley Manning by now. What's the date?
Yeah.
The 28th now? Oh, yeah, he'd have been gone.
Yeah.
Scot-free.
Yeah, instead of launching drones on the third day in an office like Obama did.
That's right, he'd be sitting there on Democracy Now, right now, talking to Amy Goodman about his mistreatment at Quantico.
Yeah, freeing all the federal drug convictions and getting rid of nothing. But, you know, that's not the country we live in.
Nope, afraid not. All right, now, so let me ask you about this other great article that you wrote at FFF. By the way, if you're tuning in late or for some reason you missed it, we're talking with Tim Kelly from the Future Freedom Foundation. That's FFF.org. And here's a good one, Torture and the Rule of Law, but more to the point. The one I really want to talk about here is the Corporatist Intelligence Agency. And this is really about kind of the history of the CIA and its origins, obviously, in the OSS during the war. But then, you know, who were the characters that put it together and what was their real mission in the world and that kind of thing. It's a real fun article. And it's the kind of thing that it's just the perfect kind of revisionism that I like, especially for a newbie who's first allowing themselves to ask themselves if maybe the government, at least since World War II, might have been a corrupt evil empire, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like what I heard, I think it was the late Fletcher Prouty, who said about the CIA's greatest cover story for the Central Intelligence Agency is that it's an intelligence agency. I might have been overstating the fact, but again, he was there at the beginning. He saw
right.
His presence at the beginning. So I'm going to defer to him.
Well, it says in the National Security Act of 1947, and this is not an exact quote, but I think it's something like, The CIA shall also do other things from time to time as the president shall direct. Or something like that, which there's your loophole the size of the solar system right there.
Alan Dulles ran with that one, and that, he was good at doing things like that. And
other things, huh? I can think of some of those.
The other thing, and, you know, what happened was, basically what the CIA was a consummation of a kind of an unholy alliance, incestuous union between big business and government. It probably started around, the end of the 19th century, the 20th century, when you had big business and you had the formation of corporations and all that stuff. And you can really see it happening at the Versailles Conference, where Alan Dulles was, actually, as a very young man. And from there, he went on to Wall Street, and he went on to represent some of the biggest corporations in the country at Sullivan and Cromwell. And one of them was United Fruit, which benefited greatly from an operation in Guatemala in 1954 when the government there...
Well, and Chase, right?
I'm sorry?
Weren't the Dulles brothers the lawyers for Chase Manhattan?
That too, yes. They were bagmen for the Rockefeller interest, the money's interest, you know. And what happened was... Well, for one thing, the CIA, the draft report to form it was, the people that wrote it were a bunch of Wall Street lawyers and bond traders. And, so they got to write the report and for the idea of what the CIA would do. And the Cold War kind of became the cover for their operations. And these guys kind of, they had business interests all throughout the world. They were agents with these business interests. And so the intelligence world was always closely linked to the business world. And this is particularly true with the petroleum and intelligence. Petroleum and insurance industry. And if you look at the history of AIG and its origins with CV Star in Asia, it spells it out pretty well there. And a lot of it is because it was practical. The insurance companies had information on businesses and cities and ports and all the stuff in Asia, particularly in Japan. And they utilized this stuff to get information for bombing and espionage and intelligence. And as a return for that, they were heavily subsidized, and because of the large flow of money, they also became used to launder money for operations, and this is also true of the petroleum industry. So they were the lines became immediately blurred. In fact, they were intentionally blurred between Wall Street and the intelligence community in Washington, and it all kind of worked together. And this is from that you kind of see the contours of the American empire, and that's kind of what it is, sort of this business corporatist structure, kind of on the British East India Company model.
Right.
And, from there, you get the drug trade, and again, you've had, during World War II, you had the OSS working with Lucky Luciano to fight fascism in Italy, and as a reward for that, he was released from prison. And then during the Cold War, you had the CIA working with the mob to fight the communists in Italy, and as a return, they were kind of given the heroin business of, I guess, coming out of Marseille, France, and the French connection and all that stuff. The drugs, of course, with Vietnam, you had the operations in Vietnam with the Hmong people and the Mountain people and the Golden Triangle, and Alfred McCoy writes about that. Peter Dale Scott's another great scholar in that. In fact, he kind of expands on that, where it wasn't just a communion alliance. They actively got involved in the drug trade for the purposes of getting, black budget money for operations, things like that. So it's much more involved. And then you have the 80s with the Contras, and basically everywhere you go, you see where you have intelligence operations, you see, a flowering and, prospering drug trade. And it's not just a coincidence. And I get into a lot of these operations in the third world, it's a great arena for the espionage game, the drug trade, and the arms trade. And it kind of takes on a life of its own. It no longer really means anything in terms of national security. It's just the business of espionage, drug dealing, arms shipments, and drugs.
Right. Well, it's like when you read Smedley Butler or something like that, and he goes down the list of, I invaded, Honduras for this company, and I invaded Argentina for that company, or whatever. I don't know the exact list, but.
I was a muscle man for Brown's brother Harriman.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the quote I'm thinking of. He, the famous Marine Corps general. It's sort of the same thing going through your article when it's Donald Sutherland and JFK going down the list of all the different countries that they overthrew in such a short amount of time, in the Eisenhower years especially, and then into the the Kennedy years and how good they were. And then, of course, the implication being that they just kept going, including the American president, too, because you just can't stop a good thing from rolling on. But anyway, so what's funny about it, though, is now that it's 2013 and you go back and you look at that list of coup d'etats or whatever, there's no hint whatsoever that, yeah, or else the Reds really could have got over on us, right? Which was always the excuse. But you would have to be a damn fool in 2013 to think for a minute that that was really what it was about, was what they told the American people at the time, protecting them from the Reds. This was just the most cynical, you know, Smedley Butler type coup d'etats for corporate interests. Very identifiable, very cynical ones.
Yeah, it's about control of the world's resources, natural resources, and that's why if you look at it, you see the industries that are involved in, like, natural resources, agriculture, and extraction tend to be the ones you identify in this. That's United Fruit or the Seven Sisters, Big Oil, and all that. I recommend, highly recommend Russ Baker's book, The Family of Secrets, about the Bush family. It's so much, it's about so much more. But it's he gets into that, and he kind of connects the dots and asks as many questions as he answers in that book, because that's the way he is, actually, just kind of an investigative reporter. But, yeah, the two instances, I think the three examples I use in that article, I think, because they're so obvious, there's just an obvious example of the CIA's corporatist mission, was the coup, or the toppling of the Arbenz regime in Guatemala in 54, the operation in Iran in 53, they were doing most of that for the benefit of the British and Anglo-American oil interest, and then the operation in Chile in 73. Wasn't, you know, and that goes to show that this was after, this is 10 years after Dulles was ousted at CIA, more than 10 years, but they were still doing it. And in all these instances, the primary beneficiary of that, of those operations were American businesses. You know, in terms of, yeah, I guess in Chile you had IT&T and Anaconda copper interest, and of course in Iran you had British Petroleum. I think it was Anglo-Iranian Oil Company then. I'm not sure if it was BP yet. And you had I think it was Gulf Oil, I think, primarily benefited off that. And the guy who ran that operation was Kermit Roosevelt. And if I'm not mistaken, he was given a vice presidency of Gulf Oil after that operation. You know, there might be another oil company, but basically he got a sort of the sinecure position. Yeah. And to his dying day, he claimed he was fighting communists.
You know what's interesting about all this, Tim, is in a way this is almost like just the communist model of how things work, is that if you give capitalists a state, this is what they do, world empire, that kind of thing. And I'll just throw in here to see what you think about it. And you can add whatever nuance you want. You got plenty of time. To what I just said, or what I'm about to say, which is that Gareth Porter, who is at least a progressive, you know, fair to say he's got progressive credentials, he does not identify any corporate power, whether banks or oil companies or any, or Lockheed Martin or any of those guys as being behind this. He says more than anything else, it's the Pentagon itself. It's the generals. They are the core of that dirty snowball rolling downhill. It's their interest to keep the national security state and the entire world empire rolling on and never stopping that is really dragging everybody else along, mostly willingly, but that they're really the core of the whole thing, the military, the highest ranks of the military part of the state itself. What do you think about that?
I think that's I think it's part of it. It's too narrow explanation. I think when you talk about the military-industrial complex and the interests involved, they're all involved. It's this corporate, military, petroleum, network, and they're all intertwined. That's the problem, and that's why you can't really blame one person. One interest. They're all interested. I mean, it's like blaming war on central banking or blaming central banking on war. Which is it? Will they enable each other? And sometimes when you're looking at this kind of this globalist system we have today, it's like you want to say it's all a conspiracy. Well, okay, it's all a conspiracy. Well, it may not be a conscientious conspiracy, but it is collectively, it acts like a conspiracy. At the end of the day, you have the same result. So I don't know if that really even matters. But I think what you do have, again, you have corporations that have acquired global transnational interests, and those transnational interests supersede love of country, loyalty, and that's why you get things like in the 30s and early 40s, the Rockefellers still doing business with Germany during the war. It's now known that that Standard Oil facilitated the purchase of aviation fuel for the Luftwaffe during the war,
yeah,
through various subsidiaries channeled through South America and into Switzerland.
Well, that's the fun part, right, is the Trading with the Enemy Act. It wasn't just, your punishment if we convict you of trading with the enemy. It was the process for how to get a license to trade with the enemy, stamped by FDR.
Yeah. And they did that. Those deals,
it's not treason. I have a permit.
Yeah, it's not treason. It's just business. And I guess John Loftus did a book about that. He went down, been over there in Maryland and went into the vaults and pretty much uncovered this stuff and proved that these transactions were occurring during the war. And George Bush's, father, Prescott Bush, was involved in this and actually was cited for it, had his assets during the war, but wasn't prosecuted because he turned around and established the USO.
Charles Higham is the best author on this, I think. He wrote two books.
Sorry, who's that?
American Nazis, or American Swastika and Trading with the Enemy, the Nazi-American money plot. That stuff will knock your socks off, man.
But in a way, it all makes sense. If you look at how these people think, they're supranationalists. They're supranational. They're transnational. That's how they operate. And the governments of the world are kind of, they're Asian. So maybe that's too simplistic, but they're able to manipulate the governments of the world, bend policy. They make the decisions, and the CIA is a great example of that, the formation of the CIA and how it operates.
Right. It just lays it all bare for you so that you don't have to suffer illusions any longer.
Yeah, it's an agency. The question is, who are they acting? For whom are they acting for? That's the question. And, there's bureaucratic interest, too. That happens, too. But I think overall, if you look at it, look at the bigger picture. They are benefiting certain corporations, and the three examples I cite in the article are just so blatant. Whether it's the Guatemalan 54, Iran 53, or Chilean 73, it was all done for the benefit of the United Fruit Company in Guatemala, the Anglo-American oil interest in Iran in 53, and then, of course, in 73, they took out Allende just so they could secure IT&T and Anaconda and other interests involved down there, because it certainly wasn't a strategic interest for the United States. I think Henry Kissinger first said that if Chile falls, there's a dagger pointed at the heart of Antarctica. He kind of dismissed it. But then he probably got a phone call from Chase Manhattan and said, hey, that's when he orchestrated, the assassination of Rene Schneider, who was the chief of staff of the military, and who refused to orchestrate a coup, and they had him taken out, and then Pinochet was much more willing to do their bidding down there, and he did it, and he was rewarded for it.
Indeed.
So, this is how the world operates, and it's pretty obvious if you're just willing to crack a book, and it's not really, not deep politics, it's there, in your face.
Yep, there you go, right at FFF.org, the Corporatist Intelligence Agency. Maybe in parentheses, that's all it is. By Tim Kelly. And also, please, y'all, check out three reasons. Not check out. Share this thing. Maybe with somebody you know who's got a little bit of power and influence somewhere. I don't know, man. Three reasons why the charges against Bradley Manning should be dropped. Because he's an American hero. That's why. It's Tim Kelly at the Future Freedom Foundation. Thanks so much for your time, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Man, you need some Liberty stickers for the back of your truck. At LibertyStickers.com, they've got great state hate, like Pearl Harbor was an inside job. The Democrats want your guns. U.S. Army, die for Israel. Police brutality, not just for black people anymore. And government school, why you and your kids are so stupid. Check out these and 1,000 other great ones at LibertyStickers.com. And of course, they'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here, inviting you to check out the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org. They've got a brand new website with new and improved access to more than 20 years worth of essays promoting the cause of liberty. And FFF's writers, including Jacob Hornberger, Jim Bovard, Sheldon Richman, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and more, aren't just good. They're the best at opposing and discrediting our corrupt overlords in Washington and their warfare, welfare, regulatory police state. That's the Future Freedom Foundation's new and improved site at fff.org. Hey, all, Scott Horton here, inviting you to check out WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by former hedge fund manager Mike Swanson, who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Wall Street Window is unique in that Mike shows people what he's really investing in and updates you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike thinks his positions are going to go up because of all the money the Federal Reserve is printing to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. And Mike's got a great new book coming out, so also keep your eye on writermichaelswanson.com for more details. Hey ladies, Scott Horton here. If you would like truly youthful, healthy, and healthy-looking skin, there is one very special company you need to visit. Dagny & Lane at DagnyAndLane.com. Dagny & Lane has revolutionized the industry with a full line of products made from organic and all-natural ingredients that penetrate deeply with nutrient-rich ionic minerals and antioxidants for healthy and beautiful skin. That's Dagny & Lane at DagnyAndLane.com. And for a limited time, add promo code SCOTT15 at checkout for a 15% discount. The Emergency Committee for Israel, Brookings, Heritage, APAC, WINEP, GINSA, PNAC, CNAS, the AEI, FPI, CFR, and CSP. It sure does seem sometimes like the war party's got the foreign policy debate in D.C. all locked up. But not quite. Check out the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. They put America first, opposing our government's world empire, and especially their Middle Eastern madness. That's the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org.